Welcome to Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Being a fireman, father, veteran, husband, world record holder, and Ironman, he brings stories of experience to impact your life while challenging you to live it. What do you want from your life? Why do you want it? Are you willing to go through the challenges to get there? If you have the courage to take that first step, let this podcast be the catalyst to start your fire
while you bring the resilience to make it continue to burn.
Our lives are made up of moments called right nows. So let's get started. Forged in the Fires podcast with your host, Fireman Rob, begins now.
We got the same.
Welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today's interview is a great one. It's actually going back into the files of Matt Long. Matt Long was an FDNY firefighter. He worked the pile at 9/11. He also had something happen to him that changed the perspective and the trajectory of his life, but that didn't hold him down. I want you to hear this great story and this great interview from a friend, Matt Long. All right. Well, Matt, I gave a little part of your story, but you know, your story is so robust, and it's one of those where your life changed. You know, these challenging times we're in right now, everybody goes through those, but you had a challenging time on December 22nd of 2005 that kind of changed the trajectory of your life. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, well, back in 2005, at the heart of the biggest tourism city, time in New York City, Christmas time, the transit authority was in negotiations with the city, and they went on strike. They shut down the public transit system throughout the five boroughs, and I at the time was an instructor at the fire academy in the health and fitness unit. I had about 12 years on the job. The only way for me to get to work was to ride my bike. And what could be lending to some of these technical difficulties, it feels like it's December here. It's almost 39 degrees and the wind is really howling. So maybe it's my internet. It was cold as hell. I was a fair weather bicyclist. I never went out in the rain, and I wasn't one of those hardcore guys that had to get on the bike no matter what. But I had no choice. So I rode my bike to work. I got about four blocks from where I live. A bus made a kind of an odd turn. He came all the way from the left side of Third Avenue, Manhattan, to go down what would normally be a narrow street. It wasn't one of those double wide streets in like 34th, 57th, 72nd, 79th. It was just 52nd Street, just made a turn and took me underneath the chassis.
Oh, and that changed your life because you had to go from, you know, in essence, firefighting, it's a tough profession. It's not something that you just go into because you can't become a typewriter, typist or anything like that. It's one of those professions where it's very physical. And so this kind of took you out. How long were you out for?
Stories of at this point I'm 39 years old and I'm probably in the best shape of my life because of the sport of triathlon. I was very lean. I was getting faster and or getting better. And 5 months that 5 months in the hospital bed, when I left the hospital, I was 122 pounds.
Wow, that doesn't help.
So I had a lot of rebuilding to do.
But at the same time, you had to learn to walk again. So it wasn't even just that. It was you had to learn to walk again after being at that high level of doing triathlons. But it didn't really stop you. How long did it take for you to get back into, in essence, the swing of things where you could actually start to compete?
Well, look, it took me 3 years to go back and do my comeback marathon.
Wow.
And then 4 years from the accident date to do my comeback Ironman. And it was more about being involved than it was competing at that point, even mm-hmm. though I was competing with myself. I was getting out there and doing the best I could. But I went from being a 3-hour marathon runner to a 7.5-hour marathon. Oof. So I wasn't really competing with too many people.
Well, you're competing against yourself. And, you know, I kind of like to dive deeper into the mindset thing, because you were at, you worked at 9/11. What house were you at?
I worked in Spanish Harlem, engine 53, lot of 43.
Okay.
I was a 43 truck, for my entire career.
Wow. And, you know, the mental game that, our profession plays on us. And then you add in the aspect of what you went through. How do you get through each day to be able to strive and to be able to thrive? Because I think a lot of people can take away from your story the ability to put something that from what you learned in those extreme circumstances to really help them to find what their potential is.
You know, the job that we do, it's exactly the same mindset when you talk about racing. You know, I didn't have to run, I didn't have to bike or swim. I was lucky enough to get to do those things. Yeah. And when you go to your work at the firehouse, it's the same kind of mindset. It's like, wow, you know, am I going to get to do something special tonight? You know, when you have a conversation with people that aren't in the fire service, and you talk about how, what a great day at work, we went to this fire and, you know, it was unbelievable. I was crawling down this hole. I was doing this above the fire. They look at you like you're crazy. But there is a thrill aspect to it.
Yeah.
But that one time. And look, there's thousands of firefighters across the country. There's about 8,000 to 9,000 in New York City. Not everyone's making rescues, but that one time you get a chance to help someone,
mm-hmm.
and that there's no race, there is no better feeling than that.
Yeah,
so I was lucky enough to get to do that for 12 solid years.
Yeah, and you're being on a truck company. I can imagine there's a few calls that you had that. Kind of changed the trajectory of your thinking a few times. Does one call besides obviously 9/11 really stick out in your mind as to something that really affected you, but actually made you move forward easier?
Yeah, I remember a friend of mine had some firefighters in from Ohio. Not Ohio, Iowa. They were in New York City, and my friend was like, "Hey, you think you could, you know, show these guys New York City Firehouse?" So I said, I'm working this night, you know, have them come up. So these two guys came up, spent the night with us, not the whole night, but they came up, had dinner with us. And if we were getting a call out, they would jump on the rig with us. And man, it happened that night. We went to a fire in an apartment building. It was like the 9th or 10th floor. And turns out that it was a Collier's mansion. The woman was a hoarder. She had stuff going from floor to ceiling, just a narrow path to get through the apartment where the places she wanted to be or go, bathroom, kitchen, bedroom, living room. And when we pulled her out, my boss, who had much more experience and time on the job than I did, when we pulled her out to the hallway, he basically let me know. He said, "Pass her back. She's gone. Don't look." And I was young on the job. I only had two years maybe. And so I'm pulling the body back, and I, for whatever reason, didn't listen. And I looked right at her face, and her eyes were still open. And I looked at him and I said, "Boss, she's alive." He's like, "Told you not to look." And he goes, "Stay with her, pass it to the engine, see what they say." And she was gone, like frozen in time. And I never forget that. Had he known, he's like, "You should have listened. I knew." And it's a hard thing to see. It's a hard thing to get through. But everyone has to do it on this job someday. And you just got christened. it was awful. It was really, really sad. But again, you know, I was longing for that moment in time where I'd have that feeling of actually pulling someone out that made it.
How many years ago was that call that still lingers in your mind?
I went on the fire service in 1993. That was 95.
That's crazy. I mean, 25 years.
I could tell you everything that happened, and I won't tell you everything that happened because it was 25 years ago. It was a different job. I can't get in trouble, but I don't want to tarnish anyone's relationship.
It was a very different job back then, and you know, it's. I think you look at the fire service, and I think a lot of people. You know, I think if we could emulate the fire service in our society, that it'd be a lot better off, because you have a brotherhood and a sisterhood that the bonds within there are so deep, and people would do whatever they can to help you. When you were going through all those struggles, what kind of help did you get to be able to push forward?
Well, first of all, you opened up before the technical difficulties with, you know, you have family on here, and it's true.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe the New York City brotherhood may be a little tighter than when you go city to city or state to state, but we're still one big brotherhood. I got tremendous support from not only my firehouse, 5343, you know, but the battalion that I worked in. Houses that I have two brothers that are on that are firefighters. One wasn't when I got hurt, but what was he? I don't even remember. He may have been. But from their houses, and I'm talking about visitation, rides, helping with rides for my family so they didn't have to worry about parking. Wow. Just sitting outside my room with a uniformed firefighter to alert my parents or anyone else if anything changed in my condition, you know, standing guard. And for 5 months in the hospital, now I wasn't eating food for quite a while, but when I started to eat food, I didn't have one hospital cooked meal. I had a firehouse cooked meal. The moment they said he can eat regular food, one of the firehouses was there with a meal.
How many pounds did you say that you gained there?
Lost.
Oh, you lost. Wait, that must have been terrible. Yeah, I trust me, I wasn't cooking. You would have lost weight if I was cooking.
I didn't have much of an appetite, but I was getting good food.
I love it. And you know, for healing and for getting past these kind of things, that kind of support, and you know, I think it lends itself to, you look at the endurance community, and everybody in the endurance community is going after something bigger than themselves, and they need that support system. And a lot of people don't understand going for like an Ironman like you did at Ironman Lake Placid. They don't understand the concept. But having a support network to be able to finish that is so critical, isn't it?
Absolutely. Listen, and the support could be as little as, I understand you need time of the endurance athlete, right? If you're going Ironman, you have to put in time. Not everyone is finishing these things in under 10 hours. So your training days are on the weekends or whatever. If you don't have the luxury of being a firefighter and doing something on a Wednesday with three guys that aren't working, or girls, your long days are 7, 8, 9. They could be 10 hours.
Yeah.
And your family, your support crew, significant others, friends, whatever they are, have to be willing to give you that time hassle-free. That's at the very least, that's the support. Forget about renting a house and going to the race and making signs and cheering you on.
Right.
But at the very least, for 6 to 10 months of training, they have to say it's okay.
What did you feel as a power from, because for myself, when I do Ironmans or when I've done like halves, it was always kind of healing to me to be able to go out there and challenge life, challenge these perspectives of what is possible. Was that similar to what you felt with Ironman? Was that similar draw to you, or what was your draw to be able to do these races?
I always liked pushing myself. I didn't raise my wake up one day and start calling friends and say, hey, let's go do an Ironman. Well, let's get involved in this. It's the opposite. I kind of got challenged. Yeah. You know, I kind of got introduced to the sport. A friend asked me to do a triathlon or a sprint distance triathlon or Olympic distance, my first one. And he said, hey, let's do this. Let's raise some money for a good cause. And I was always the guy who said, I'm in, you know, that's it. Let's do it. And I got bit by the bug. I saw myself getting back into better shape. I was not in the best shape of my life when it started. And two, I was meeting some really good, like-minded people when it came to, pushing yourselves. Mm-hmm. So I really fed off that. I like the bike rides where, hey, let's go. It's just a friendly ride, 16 miles, 17 miles an hour. And next thing you know, as soon as we're on the open road, it's, hey, oh, what's happening here? It's 18, it's 19, it's 20. Yeah, I'm good. Let's go. Yeah, I love that.
That's awesome. I completely agree. Now, here's this funny thing that I was reading about you. So in 2005, you had that bus incident. And then in 2010, Men's Fitness put you as one of the 25 fittest men. I mean, most people, yeah, that's what I'm saying, is like most people don't transition like that. It's like, hi, you can't walk. Now you're one of the fittest men by Men's Health. How did that feel to get that title?
I'm taking that one to the grave. I did a podcast with Rich Roll, and he was also labeled one year one of the men's 25 fittest. And, you know, we both kind of laughed. I said, do I truly believe I'm one of the fittest men in the world? No. But I was writing and promoting a book. He was writing and promoting a book. So I'm like, I'm going to take it to the bank.
Yep.
But I will say that it's a play on fitness, that it's not just physical.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to push away. You know, you have to be a certain type of person to be a firefighter, to run into a burning building, to help a perfect stranger. Okay, so I could check that box. And now I have to say, well, I was just crushed by a 40,000-pound bus and, you know, had 43 different surgeries, and I'm back doing an Ironman. So I must be pretty damn mentally tough.
Yeah.
So I'll take it. I'll take it as, maybe some guy's going to lift more or run faster or swim faster than me. But I'm not going to back away as easy as some of the other people in the world. So I'll take the 25 fittest mentally tough person.
I love it. I love it. That's the best way to look at it. You talked about your book, The Long Run. It's a great book. You can get it on Amazon, I'm assuming.
Yes, Amazon.
Amazon. It's a good book. You gotta go buy the book so you can get more growlers. We gotta have our priorities here, brother. What would you say is, you know, for all these, there's a lot of endurance athletes that are really struggling right now, challenged by races being canceled and not really understanding when it's going to, everything's going to go away. What would you say, you know, being one of the 25 mentally fittest individuals, I'll say in the history, what could you say to them to be able to help them through these times?
Well, look, we didn't even get in it, but 2012, when Hurricane Sandy, destroyed the Northeast here, the East Coast, it was right around, it was the weekend before Marathon Sunday. And I took a little bit of a slack. I took a stance in Running Worlds magazine saying that it should be canceled. Obviously I wasn't running it. So, because I had retired from running after my marathon, comeback marathon. The thing that I would tell people out there who have trained hard and may miss a race this season. Now, I'm saying may because I'm very hopeful that things are going to turn around.
Right.
I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful that I'm going to be up at Lake Placid this year, cheer at midnight, cheering the people in. I go back as often as I can. My kids love it. It's a great time. I'm very hopeful that's still going to happen. But if it doesn't, you know, Just refocus. You've put in the work. The race day is really not the pinnacle of what you're doing. It's the 6 to 10 or 1 years of training. Look what it did for you. you know? And I talk about when I go out and I'm on the speaking circuit and I talk about what happened to me, I realized in the Fire Academy, we had a saying on the wall in the physical fitness unit. It said, train for life. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm fine. I'm training for life. I'm going to save some guy's life. I'm going to go in there, just burn a building, pull someone out, going to make a difference. What I didn't realize is I wasn't training to become an Ironman. I wasn't training to run the Boston Marathon. I was training for life. And life came at me in the form of a bus. And if I wasn't as fit as I was because of triathlon and endurance sports, I'd be dead. And my doctors flat out told me that. Wow. So everything you've done so far is already the medal, is already the T-shirt. It'll come. It'll come back, and you'll get your opportunity to finish that race.
Wow.
Just hang in there and stay positive.
All right, I'm ready to go out and race now. That's saying a lot because I'm tired. You know, you have a foundation as well, the I Will Foundation. And tell us a little more about that, because the more I read on it, you have a great TEDx talk. And I think it's just such a powerful voice from an individual who obviously, you know, in the fire service, you're well respected. Tell us more about that I Will Foundation.
So how the I Will Foundation came about, there's two different directions. When I was released from the hospital, I was home living part-time in a wheelchair. My little brother, number nine, he's also a fireman now. He was taking care of me. So he slid over a box. He goes, listen, I got to go run some errands, do some things. He propped me up on a couch and he goes, why don't you go through some of these cards and, you know, letters that people sent you, just, you know, give yourself something to do. So I said, okay, no problem. I'll do that. And I started digging through some cards, and you know, one of the things that bothered me most was when people came into the hospital or to visit me at home and said, "Hey, if anyone can do this, you can." And I was like, "How do you know that? Like, how do you know I can come back from this? How do you know that I'm going to be okay? You know, show me someone else who's been run over by a bus and lived and came back." Yeah. So. You know, so with that being said, an article comes out of one of the cards that someone sent me, and it was about a guy up in Massachusetts. His name was Fabio Slavin. He was a cyclist and a triathlete, but mainly a cyclist. And he was hit by an oil tanker truck a few years before me. So, you know, very similar injuries. And I started Googling him, I picked apart that article to find out how I might be able to. Here's someone I can ask. Like, how people keep telling me I'm going to make it. What are you doing now? And I got him. I called a bike shop he used to work at that was mentioned in the article. They knew him, still knew him. I told them my story, sent them the links, and they were like, "Holy crap! You got to meet him." So they connected us. To this day, we have not met physically, but email, phone call, we've chatted. He helped me, and he was back racing. And obviously I was hurt, I think, a little more than he was, but he was physically back racing, cycling, and doing all this stuff. So he gave me a little bit of hope. And what I told him in one of our phone calls was, if you help me, I'll help others. And I said to him that I will not make it so hard to be found. And then I started to think, how am I going to do this? And I said, all right. I said, I'm going to start a website, just the I Will Foundation. And it was just going to be my story. So that if someone else got hurt in North Dakota or in California or something, they could find it and say, holy Christ, if this guy can do it, I got to talk to him.
Right.
And that was the birth of the I Will Foundation. The name came from basically my mindset. Yeah. You know, I woke up every day saying, I can't do this anymore. I won't be able to go there. I'm not going to race anymore. I'm not doing this. And then eventually my mindset switched to I will.
Right.
And every morning I wake up and do I have struggles? Even today I have struggles. But every morning is I will get something accomplished. I will, you know, go out into my garage and exercise. I will train for this race I'm training for. And that was it. So I in a very small way seek out to help at least one person. And if that's all I've helped, that's great. But I know it's been more. Right. And people reach out to me. And if I can help them financially, get back in the game, I do. If I help them mentally get back in the game, I do it. And it, you just have to want the help and have the right mindset.
Matt Long, you are an amazing individual. I have to say, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, there's certain people in this world that make inspiration kind of a daily thing, and you are one of them, sir.
Thank you.
You know, it's been a pleasure and an honor to talk with you, and I know there's a lot of great things that you and I will be doing. We talked before, and we'll be doing some great things together, and definitely would love to talk to you again. This time I'll get the technical stuff worked out. Maybe I have to have a beer on my end. I don't know.
I just want to blame the non-drinker.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, first time I've done a couple of these things, some on Zoom, some on StreamYard. I don't know, webinar jam. I don't know if I did something wrong. I apologize to that and to the viewers. Thanks for sticking with us.
Hey, this is a
really appreciate it, Rob.
This is a firefighter show. We use duct tape and ingenuity to get everything done.
Just don't burn dinner.
I don't cook dinner, buddy. All right, Matt. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, and definitely we'll have you back on again.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
All right, thanks, brother. Everyone. Thank you for joining us, everybody.
Such a great interview and such a great perspective from a gentleman I greatly respect, Matt Long. Thanks for joining us today on Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. I truly appreciate you listening to Forged in the Fires. Talk with you next time.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast, and please share this episode with a friend or family. To find out more about Fireman Rob or reach out about a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.